What is up, guys? Welcome back to the show. We have got the conclusion of last week's chat with Jim and Hari from the What Do We Know podcast. So this is a part two. We are jumping right in the middle. So don't forget to go back and listen to the first half of this, or it might not make complete sense. But these guys were a ton of fun, and they had so many great questions, particularly for those just finding Bitcoin. And in this part, we get into all sorts of fun stuff like keys, wallets, the different ways to buy Bitcoin, and kind of that path forward, the future potential, and why it is that we are still very early in Bitcoin's life cycle. A quick thanks to Bitbox, the standard in simple and secure hardware wallets, and to Level.co, the only option for full Bitcoin banking services, for their support of Bitcoin Audible. I did cut out the initial section of the What Do We Know podcast where the gang are just kind of riffing on stuff and having a good time. I wanted to keep this just to the Bitcoin content and their thoughts after the interview. So don't forget to check out the What Do We Know podcast at guyswan.com/WDWK for What Do We Know. But with that, let's go ahead and jump back into the show, our chat on the What Do We Know podcast, part two.
All right, so what do you say we get back into our interview in part two with Bitcoin's own Guy Swan?
Let's do it.
How do you keep your Bitcoin? Because I'm familiar with the term of a Bitcoin wallet, but I don't really understand it. But I know that my Bitcoin is still in exchanges, which sure, according to some people means it's not really my Bitcoin yet, because I'm not physically.
You have an IOU. You have someone who owes you Bitcoin. Yes. So like Coinbase in this example, they owe you however much Bitcoin you have on that platform. The problem is that if somebody hacks them and takes it all, there's no way, you know, there's no real insurance policy for Bitcoin because it is 21 million. And if a hacker manages to withdraw everybody's Bitcoin because they steal the keys from Coinbase, Coinbase can't go in and fix that. They can't call up their bank.
That makes me feel better.
Yeah. Coinbase can't call up the bank or the president and be like, well, emergency action, let's undo this. Again, Bitcoin is irreversible. That's its power. The fact that you know they can't reverse it is how you know it has unbelievable assurances that are wholly unique on the planet. So it is scary. And at the same time, it is groundbreaking. So because of that, to own Bitcoin, like you don't actually have like the Bitcoin, like the tokens themselves. They just exist out there. Like everybody has a copy of them. But the thing is that you are the only one, if you hold a secret, like, kind of like a password, essentially, if you hold this secret and you don't tell anybody else a key, you're the only one who can unlock those Bitcoin. So everybody has a copy of them and they have a copy of the lock that is keeping anyone from being able to edit that explicit part of the Bitcoin system. And you are the only one with the key that can go click and prove that, yep, this lock coincides with this key, and then you can move them somewhere. So what your wallet is a place to store your keys. It's like your keychain is not your car or your house, but is the only reason you can get in your car and go, or get into your house. And without the key, you can't. Well, except obviously somebody could break in a window or hotwire your car, but there is none. There is the equivalent of that in Bitcoin doesn't exist. You have to have the key.
So I can just call Coinbase and be like, give me my keys. I sound like me, like at a bar.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You would withdraw, and what they would do is they would unlock it on their side with their keys, and then they would relock it with the key that you gave them. So it would be on your, but that's the equivalent of just withdrawing. They just send the Bitcoin to you. So if you want to hold your own keys, like I have a hierarchy for however much it's worth. Like if I'm only like carrying around like a few hundred bucks, maybe $1,000 or something like that, when it's getting into, I would really like to not lose this. I will keep that amount or less on my mobile phone, but I almost explicitly keep it on a wallet where I know if I lost my phone, I wouldn't lose the money. So like Hexa Wallet has a really cool backup system. Casa Wallet and Green Wallet are kind of my go-tos for that. Because if I lose my phone for any one of those, backups are like encrypted and stored in multiple different places. So I know that I can just buy a new phone and then connect it to those multiple different places again, like iCloud, or you know, maybe one of them will share a piece of it with a contact. There's a couple little clever systems, and log back into my account or whatever. And then it will grab all those different pieces, put them back on the phone, and then unlock them. And then I have my wallet just as if nothing happened. So
it's fascinating.
The beauty of it is you can split up keys. This is digital information. So you can split it up into 100 pieces and make it so that you only need 50 of them to get it back and put it in 100 different places. It's programmable. Like you can just tweak it and do whatever you want. And that's kind of the beauty of this thing, is there's completely unique like custodial models that you can't do with anything else.
So when we're talking about this, because it's very possible to lose your keys and lose your wallet. and lose the money in there.
Yeah, being in for 9 years, trust me, I know how to do that.
I believe that. We could do an entire podcast on that subject, I would imagine, at that point. But at the same time, the difference is no one finds it. It's not like if you lose,
it's gone.
It's gone. Yeah. Like when you drop a $100 bill on the ground, it disintegrates in this case instead of, you know, someone else picking it up and running away with it. Wow.
There's no forgot password link.
There's not. And it doesn't take Face ID or my thumbprint.
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well,
now you can have the drawing board. That's the thing, is that you can have a client. You can have a piece of software that uses that as like a backup to grab the key from somewhere else. And that's kind of the beauty of it, is that like people can program really clever solutions around that problem, but those solutions have existed for 5 years. So if you've been in Bitcoin for 9, you know what it's like before any of that stuff even existed. But luckily that problem is much, much less of an issue now. People used to lose Bitcoin like, oh, it's Wednesday? Oh, okay, somebody deleted 50,000 Bitcoin. That is very unfortunate. But the beautiful thing, like this, I don't think I have my BitBox handy. But like there are these things called hardware wallets. And like this is a cold card.
I'm gonna press you on that. That looks like a 1980s solar calculator.
That is it. It's a joke that like this is like, you got to get your Bitcoin calculator.
Okay, that's what it looks like, right?
Yes, but this is a place to keep your keys on a piece of hardware that even if you plug it into a computer that is just loaded with viruses, Trojan horses, and malware, this thing keeps it safe.
Really?
So you can send a transaction on the nastiest computer who's, you know, been used by everybody in the neighborhood, you know, the neighborhood bicycle version of a computer. And you know that your Bitcoin are safe because this thing allows like 3 pieces of communication. And it's simple push information. So nothing can get into this. This is a hardware device designed to hold keys as securely as possible. And what's beautiful is that like this is something that's referred to as HSM, hardware security module, or signing module. I can't remember. But this is like something that major corporations and stuff have been using for ages, because you know, a normal ass username and password doesn't do well when you're dealing with billions of dollars.
Right.
So this is a market that like major companies, governments, and all of these institutions have been doing for a very, very long time. And I actually had a guy, the guy who does the BitBox, on my show just the other day, and he said he has a good friend who works in the HSM industry. And he said that the general consensus is that the ones around Bitcoin are quite superior to the industry for corporate and like government.
Sure.
security, like key management. And it's because there's no back door. Like there's no alternative if your keys are lost. So like Ledger, Trezor, Bitbox, Cold Card, Kobo Vault. I mean, there's tons of them now and I love them. I get one of every one of them. Like I blow money on Bitcoin hardware wallets. Like it's like they're free.
See, that scares me about it though, too, because we're
certainly it should. And it's nervous. It's unfamiliar.
And especially when we talk to an older population, you're like, the good thing about this is we don't have to trust people. We just trust the computers. I'm like, okay, sure. That's not helping. You know what I mean? But then it's also like, I'm like, okay, I want to get more into this world. But then it's like, oh, Coinbase is going to take their fee. Oh, and then I've got to buy this hardware wallet. It's like someone walking me down a path where everywhere I have to tip every person along the way to get there. And now my $100 investment, it's like, it's gone up 30%, but only $18 of that $100 you spent got invested.
Yes. If you've got $100, just get a mobile wallet. Just get a decent mobile wallet.
Okay.
That's all you need. This is like the Bitbox is like $100. The Trezor, I think this guy is like $150 or something like that. So these things are not like super cheap. At least not for storing $100. Like,
okay, sure.
You already did it. You bought one. Yeah. Right. If you have $10,000, in Bitcoin, if you have like a significant investment and you don't have one of these, you're stupid. Like,
okay.
You need to just take that next level and learn how to really hold your own keys.
Okay.
But so it's just a matter of like how much you have invested, what level of risk you're willing to take. So I just recommend it. Like I said, like anything like $1,000 or less, I'll be okay with keeping it on a mobile wallet. But when I'm like looking at $4,000, it goes on one of my wallets, period.
Gotcha.
It goes on one of my hardware.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
No, when you talk about keeping it in a mobile wallet on your mobile device, that means if I physically lose my cell phone, is it gone forever or is it backed up in my iCloud?
That's the thing, is it depends on your wallet.
Okay.
Most wallets prior to like 2 or 3 years ago, yeah, it was gone. If you lost your mobile wallet, it was gone.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And people lost it because of that.
But you imagine
it's like a wallet with cash in it, really. So, you can't back up your cash. You can back up your mobile wallet, but if you lost your wallet with cash in it, it's gone, right?
Right. But this is more than just your cash. If you're keeping all your, I mean, this is like, this I is got like drunk keeping last
everything
night
that you have in cash.
I lost a deed to my house. I had my entire portfolio on the wallet,
but nobody else can open either. Yeah. But it disintegrates. Like he said, it's dropping cash on the ground and disintegrating. But that's kind of the beauty of the new wallet stuff. Like I mentioned, Casa, Hexa, Green, like these sorts of things, what they will do. Well, there's also like the most basic form of backup, which is referred to as a seed. Like, so your key is something that you can just regenerate. And the wallet, when you first set it up, will give you 24 words. Like just randomly generated words. It was like Apple, Captain, Banner. Like it will just like read this out to you. And if you write that down, if you write that down on a piece of paper and you keep that piece of paper safe, like you can lose everything. Your house can be like, let's say you've got it in a safety deposit box or something in a bank. Your house can burn down. You can lose all your mobile phones, everything, et cetera, et cetera. You just go back, get a new mobile phone, spin up that wallet or any wallet and punch all those words into it. And it will regenerate it as if nothing ever happened. So that seed is everything. But in that same way, it's really dangerous to have that seed sitting around. And like a lot of people get caught with like malware because they try to buy hardware wallets on Amazon. Never buy from a reseller. Ever, 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 ever. These are high security devices. Buy from Trezor, from Cold Card, from Bitbox. You don't want anyone to hold it before it goes to you. And people will get caught with malware that says, you know, they'll download like a plugin and be like, welcome to your new hardware wallet, punch in your 24 word seed. Nothing will ever ask you for your 24 word seed ever, ever, ever. When you set up a wallet, it will give it to you like while you're setting it up. But please don't ever punch it in anywhere. Because as soon as you put it on the internet or give it to somebody else, they have your keys just as easily as you do. And they will sweep those funds the second they get in there. So think treat those like the actual gold. And if they exist anywhere else, somebody else has got your gold.
Now, as far as like somebody new to Bitcoin who's like watched the value of it run up and is thinking, well, it's too late for me to get in. Like, what do you say to somebody like that?
Was it too late in 1992 to get on the internet? I think, are you using it at Best Buy? Like, can you, like, how easy is it to use it? But like, can everybody just really easily go do that? Like, we are so early still. I understand that it looks like, oh, it just had this big run up, but all of the potential is ahead of it. Like, we are very, very much at the beginning of this thing. Like, I see this as really 20 years out before we're really looking at this truly becoming what it's capable of becoming. In the same way that it was kind of a 30-year span until the internet was really the internet, Netflix and Facebook and Zoom meetings and like all this stuff. I think in 20 years, we're talking about streaming money. We're talking about fully decentralized infrastructure where everybody just pays by packet. And, you know, you get basically an ad-free experience of this alternative internet. There's the freemium internet, and then there's the secure and ad-free internet. And that we're literally using this thing to go in. We're scanning a QR at the checkout aisle. I still think we're that far away from it. And the funny thing is every single time the new person gets on the network, the only thing that can adjust to the additional demand and the additional people realizing just how secure and valuable this thing is. And it's unfamiliar. There's a huge learning curve. But the only thing that can adjust is the price. More people use it, more people demand it, the price goes up. And the supply doesn't. You know, the supply is actually declining in how much it increases as time goes forward until we hit 21 million.
What number are we at?
For how many exist?
Mm-hmm.
I think we're just shy of 19 million. 19. I can run the numbers really
quick. Wow. No, that's... And I own one. And I own 1/100,000th of one of those. That's amazing. I'm really...
But see, the beauty of it, you know exactly how much of the entire network you own, and nobody can ever contest that. Like, you will always own that amount. Like, if you own $20, you don't own $20 of, like, a specific pie.
Right.
Like, somebody, the pie will just double in a couple of weeks because it's really important that all these corporations get these loans of money that nobody, that doesn't exist.
Right.
And so you just get devalued. You just get wiped out. Like, I just watched a Home Alone last night. Like, we're on the Christmas movie every night, kid. Uh-huh. You know, the scene where he goes to the shopping store and, like, you know, they're like, what are you doing here, 9-year-old kid? You know, he buys, like, there's like all this stuff is like orange juice, milk and toilet paper and like all this stuff. And at the end of it, she says it's $19. and my immediate thought was that like that was $70 worth of crap.
Right, right. Like,
that's because nobody owns a fixed pie of dollars.
Yeah.
There's literally like 10 times as many dollars in the system as there was in the 90s. So if you were saving money in dollars, you just got butt raped.
Yeah,
like, you just got wiped out. Like, your $20 and then could have filled your grocery cart, and now you get like, you know, one of the cheap mugs at Target and a gallon of milk. That's exactly it.
No, that's a really good point. Guy, one of the controversial pieces of this show is we have a segment. It's America's favorite segment.
It's not James, by that reaction, dude.
Here's the thing about it, guy. It's a segment we all know and love, and it's called Howie's Hot Button. And the thing about it is, every single time we do an episode, Howie introduces it a new way. We never know what that way is going to be. James is never comfortable with it, but he's especially uncomfortable today.
Right now, yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's always a crapshoot. It's a roll of the dice. We're looking for 10 ones, you know, and we've got 9-0s most of the time, basically, guys. So without further ado, we're going to introduce America's favorite segment, Harry's Hot Button. Take it away, Harry.
Hey, Gary, I just made $200,000 speculating in Bitcoin. How was your Tuesday? Well, Steve, I just lost $200,000. Ooh, that's hot.
Did you ever wish, like me, years ago, that you could just do all of your banking in Bitcoin? That I'd have a bank account that would just instantly convert between dollars and Bitcoin whenever I needed it to. I had a connected debit card, all the ACH transfers, direct deposit, etc. Well, it's here. Level.co is full Bitcoin mobile banking services with all of the above and a free exchange. That's right, there's no trading fees. Level.co believes that the future of Bitcoin and finance in the digital space is free, and they intend to be the pioneers that make that happen. So check them out at level.co, that's LVL.co, or right at the top of the page at guyswan.com. And if you wanted a no-fee Bitcoin exchange and banking services, level.co is the only place you need to go. Let's jump back in to today's show.
All right. That was
horrible.
And what was the lounge music about? Were you guys at the Dresden from Swingers? That was the musical choice.
I needed it to sound like a casual conversation.
It sure did. Is that the Regal Beagle? Just a couple of pals hanging out discussing their Bitcoin.
I pulled up relaxing conversation music background to play as conversation music.
I'm just sitting at the bar in the Holiday Inn. My
Bitcoin. Guy, obviously this is a super popular subject right now as Bitcoin continues to grow and rise, and there's a lot of controversy out there. But is there a particular hot button that you can speak to that's going on right now?
All of it.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Right?
The whole thing. There's like a million. In fact, there's a beautiful... This is like one of my favorite things. So one of my favorite writers in this space made a die for like all the controversial issues, everything that you can talk about, like why Bitcoin isn't going to work, or like why it's doomed, or why you shouldn't use it.
And that's not a six-sided. That's like a Dungeons & Dragons, like 12-sided die, full.
3, 4, 5, 6. It's like 12. It's 12-sided. So like you just roll it. Like if you want to write an article and talk about like how Bitcoin isn't going to work, you just roll and you get one of these controversial issues, and then you just hit your bullet points and you're good. You got like 100,000 clicks on that article.
That's hilarious.
So it's like, it doesn't scale. Forks will inflate it when people copy paste it. Satoshi's got like a million coins. China controls it. Unstable fees, drugs. It's going to boil the oceans. There's no merchants. Just go on and on. Probably the top two are drugs and its energy expenditure. And I think those are just not fully understanding that if it doesn't work for drugs, then it's not actually cash. It's not
right.
Easy, right. Like, you know, like it's not an independent communication medium if you can't put porn on it. Right. Like,
yeah.
If somebody can say you can only use it for this, well, then somebody owns it. Somebody controls it. So if it's independent, if it's censorship resistant, yeah, somebody's going to buy drugs on the internet. Duh. Okay.
Well, not to mention, that makes it seem more like a currency to me. I mean, people use money to buy drugs and then literally use money to put them up their nose. Like,
they use the new money to buy them on the internet and the old money to snort it up their nose.
Like, this is our way on Earth.
The other one would be the energy expenditure. This is far more nuanced and really difficult to understand. If you just on a surface level be like, oh my Lord, Bitcoin uses so much energy. It's going to boil the oceans and the whole world's going to die in the ocean. Very easy to make that assumption. And it's an extremely complex issue. But what's funny is when you really dig into it, there's something incredibly elegant about the incentives that Bitcoin puts in the energy sector. And there's a reason why something near 70%, I mean, estimates are, you know, give or take 20%, really. But 70% is using totally wasted or renewable energy sources. And no other energy can boast that. And the reason is because Bitcoin does not compete with Main Street. Like, you know, somebody doesn't plug it in next to the Best Buy and like start mining energy. That price of energy is way too high. And your margin is explicit to what your cost of energy is. So actually, the guy who created this DAIso has one of my favorite articles on it. And it's called The Last Word on Bitcoin's Energy Consumption. He uses an analogy that there has been no tool that can consume energy profitably that has ever had the characteristics of Bitcoin. Like, no matter what you use, like, you can't just like cut it on whenever, you know, your energy is suddenly not profitable. You can't like, you know, natural gas flaring or whatever, like, you know, they don't do anything with it. They just set it on fire while they're mining oil because there's literally no profitable way to make use of it. You can't like run an AWS, like an Amazon server with it.
Sure.
Because like, if they're not flaring something, my website goes down. I try to log into it and it's like, no, give it like 8 or 9 hours. Like, there'll be some more methane to flare and then we'll turn your website back on. It's like, well, no, you need it when the user needs it. Bitcoin is something that can profitably use energy that does not have a time constraint. Like, you can turn it on whenever the hell you want. You can turn it off as soon as it's not worthwhile. And because of that, he used an example of like, imagine a topographical map of the world where energy is really high and there's like mountains, and then where energy is completely just thrown in the trash, like 2/3 of the energy doesn't even make it to the consumer. It's just lost. It's lost because they have to produce extra and run it into the ground while people aren't using it, because they burn off methane, because they have to run a dam. You know, they can't just dam it up until somebody needs it. They just got to flow and produce terawatts of energy that just gets pumped into the dirt. It just doesn't do anything. So, topographical map, where the price of energy is high, there's mountains, and then there's valleys and troughs where the price of energy is low or zero or negative. Bitcoin is like pouring a cup of water on the planet. It just fills in all the valleys. It immediately, people pick up thousands of miners and they just rush to the place where they're burning off methane, where there's a dam that nobody's plugged into, and then they plop down and then they start mining for the cheapest energy on the planet. So because of that, there is no incentive to use renewable and wasted energy that could even come close to matching Bitcoin. I actually think it's one of the most powerful natural subsidies for energy efficiency as we have ever had. It's a fascinating topic, but it's about 9 hours. So,
well, I'm sold. It's time for me to replace my regular wallet with one of those calculators. I think that's this is fascinating. And you've been incredibly generous with your time.
I want to get one thing in here before Please. We close out. So I'm newer to the space. Like, I'm a newer investor in Bitcoin. But I love it so much, dude. And partially thanks to you. As someone who's new to the space, it is increasingly more and more obvious that it is very easy to get scammed. There's all kinds of scammers out there. I was just looking at Twitter while this was going on, actually, and like a pretty decent coiner on here with a decent following got like a message from a scammer for pretending to be Ledger. And like, I just want to know, like, for the new people in the space, like, how can you tell what's a scam? How do you avoid scams? Like, is it easy? Is it hard? Like, what are some of the steps you can take to avoid getting scammed?
There's a great article, and it is one of the quintessential, you gotta read it, pieces in Bitcoin, obviously in audio on the show, called Everybody's a Scammer. Basically, the assumption when you first get in, assume everyone is trying to take your Bitcoin. Because if you accidentally give it to them, you're not getting it back. And only do anything after you learn about it. Be very, very skeptical and very, very slow about doing anything. Nobody's giving away Bitcoin. Nobody is ever. If you send Bitcoin to this address, they're not sending twice as much Bitcoin back. Like, you're just sending it to them. And there are tons of scams that do that. And if anybody is giving away a free token, that's because it's not worth shit. So just stay away from those. Don't give your seed phrases to anyone and learn as much as you can. I like to say dip your toes in first, because you got to have some skin in the game to actually want to learn, you know, like it's so easy to just procrastinate and be like, I'll do it tomorrow. So, you know, buy $50 on Cash App or Swan or something like that.
That was my next question. Like, where's a good place to kind of start if you're new?
Yeah. Probably the most trustworthy in the US to me, like the ones that I really swear by are Swan Bitcoin, Cash App, River.com. In Canada, Bull Bitcoin is a great one. In the EU, CoinFloor. CoinFloor has been around for a long time, and they're the only ones that every single month do a proof of reserves. So they actually do a public, like, signed Bitcoin on the chain audit.
Cool.
Like, this is how much our users have, and this is how much we have. We can fulfill every IOU. So CoinFloor has been around for a long time. They do not get enough props for being the only freaking exchange that does that. So those are all great options. Maybe level.co, they look like really awesome as well, but again, they're only available in 28 states. So
I was looking at that. They say there's no trading fees, not even hidden ones, which is insane.
Yeah, they have if I understand it correctly, I haven't really dug into it, but they have a freemium model where you just pay a basic fee to withdraw. And then to get no trading fees, no exchange fees, anything like that, it's just like a $9 a month. It's just like a
service. That's great. That's really
it's like, that's so brilliant, that's right? So it's good. Like dirt simple.
Yeah. I can't wait for this to come out, dude. Holy shit.
I know. It's not in North Carolina, and it's driving me crazy. Like, I want to play so bad.
Oh, it's iPhone only too. Damn it. Well.
Oh, Jesus.
We'll see.
iPhone and there's web-based. There's web-based.
Oh, word. Okay.
Good. Yeah. But I'm really excited about them. But those are great options.
Awesome.
And when you talk about, like, you know, somebody just getting their feet wet, taking $50 and buying Bitcoin, we're not talking about a speculative kind of nature, right? So it's not about waiting for the price to go down or the right timing. You're just buying Bitcoin. Like, there's no bad time to get in.
The price is down. Like, this is like, don't think about it like trading. Think about this on a scale of 10, 20 years. Like, this is going to be here for a long time. And so if you're buying $50, I mean, if the price falls, okay, yeah, get it when the price falls.
Buy more.
$19,000 is a low price for what it's actually valuable at. You're taking advantage of a huge information asymmetry. It's still incredibly unfamiliar. It's awkward to most people. There's a lot to learn, and very few people use it. In the grand scheme, people invest, but they still don't even know what they're invested in. This is great. That means there's huge potential.
I think one thing that's hard to, you know, for somebody who's not very knowledgeable about Bitcoin to wrap their head around is, like, seeing that one Bitcoin is worth, you know, $19,000 or something like that. Maybe that's the wrong way to look at it.
A sat is like 0.019 pennies. So that's why sat's the standard. A Satoshi is the smallest unit, like, so just like pennies to the dollar. A Satoshi is 1/100 millionth of a Bitcoin.
I have a third of a Satoshi.
It's really hard because it's like, you know, meters. It's like saying, oh, a kilometer is so long. Like, you know, it's like, yeah, well, you buy centimeters at a time. In that same way, one Bitcoin is actually a crap ton of units on the Bitcoin network. It's just the original, because, you know, when they're all worth zero, when the network goes live, it doesn't really matter that it's listed as a Bitcoin. So it seems like Bitcoin's price is really, really high, but you work in sats, you know, you don't spend $19,000 or buy $19,000 chunks unless you're crazy and you're Michael Saylor or Paul Tudor Jones or something like that.
Classic Michael Saylor dig. I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. When you look at that, though, what that tells me is that the current entire valuation of Bitcoin at $19,000 a piece for 21 million is $400 billion US currently.
Somewhere around there. It's like 360 or something. Yeah.
Which is not.
That's not that big.
Right, for, I mean, what
it's
it is.
Big, but it's for what it is, yeah. It's
something that can certainly be much larger than that.
Yeah. It does not take a lot of buyers to send it to 500 billion, 600 billion, et cetera.
is the expectation that like sometime down the future, like our paychecks are going to be Bitcoin. Like there's not just going to be dollars anymore. It's all Bitcoin.
Long term, yes. Long term, I genuinely think so. In the short term, one of my favorite topics to hit and that is deeply misunderstood by people is just how utterly broken the fiat system is. What a disaster the current banking and financial system really is going through. And when you really get at the nitty and gritty and you do the numbers, there is very little hope for the midterm future of that system. It is on shaky foundation, if there was ever a way to describe a foundation as shaky. Because of that, I think it will be the only reason that it actually stays propped up is because we will be able to leverage Bitcoin as a stronger foundation to keep it alive. So in the same way that, you know, your grandmother swore she was never going to use the internet, that, I can't figure out email and all that stuff. This is too complicated. I'm not going to buy a desktop computer. That's too much of an investment. Why would I do that? You know, you think about it, the internet had all of these expenses too. You think, oh, well, I had to buy a $100 hardware wallet. That's terrible. Well, you also had to buy a smartphone, a computer, a modem, and a router, you know, like, but you did it because the incredible benefits of getting on the internet were worth it. Really, Bitcoin is just kind of a little addition to the expenses we're already used to get tapped into this financial system. But I think, just like your grandmother said, it's too complicated. I can't use it. But then 20 years later, you got her an iPad and it was actually easy enough to use. And 10 years after she said that, she picked up her corded phone in the kitchen, and that corded phone, yeah, it was still analog, but it was analog to a local node. Then it turned into the internet. It shot halfway across the country, turned back into analog on the other end. That is where I think Bitcoin will really start to shine in the midterm, is it will become the back roads. It will become the Unix of the new financial system. You'll still be trading in dollars, you'll still be spending dollars, but you won't realize that international wire went from $40 to $3 and used to take four business days and now takes half a day. And it's because they're settling that international transaction in Bitcoin. Send dollars, but they're settling the transaction in Bitcoin. Mm-hmm. So just like the analog phone was actually using the internet and your grandma just didn't know it, I think the underlying tools, the infrastructure of the financial network will start to leverage Bitcoin as a settlement and like contracting system, particularly internationally. Without a doubt, it will take over the international market first. But we'll still think we're using fiat. We'll still think we're using dollars and yen to do those transactions. We'll just suddenly wonder why it got cheaper and faster and easier to do.
So can you give me just a random, when do you think that's going to be?
What you mean, like when we're actually using Bitcoin, denominating things in Bitcoin?
Yeah.
That's kind of my 20-year time frame.
20?
Yeah.
All right. But, you guys heard it first. A Guy Swan exclusive.
when we're talking about like where it really starts to become a major, major piece of like the behind the scenes, you know, the Linux to the internet, everybody uses Windows and Mac OS and Android, but they don't realize that 80% of the internet actually runs on Linux. It will become the Linux in half that time. Like, so 8 to 10 years, like I think just shy of 2030, we'll be really talking about it as like a core part of the global infrastructure.
And are there other cryptocurrencies like the Netscape in this scenario?
It's like an alternative to TCP/IP, you know, like some of like the vast majority of them are such arbitrary differences, and so many of them actually trade off the security and the trust in the network in order to like put some wing digits in it, you know, like just kind of crap. I think the vast majority of them, maybe there will be place for a second or third protocol for like 10% of the value or some very explicit use case like privacy, maybe. But I think it's a stretch, and the more and more I learn about it, the less I think that, because I think these solutions will just be built on top of Bitcoin. and then their value case will just kind of go up in the air. Like, we all speak TCP/IP. Like, no matter what we're doing, we make a FTP connection, we're doing it with TCP/IP. You know, we're doing a streaming, we're doing it with TCP/IP. Like, you know, like VHS and Betamax, one of them just died. Like, it just became VHS. And it wasn't because, you know, Betamax is like, quality is a little bit better, or this, that, or the other. But it doesn't really matter. The network effect catches, because the differences are so unbelievably minimal, that as long as it does that core function and it does it most reliably, that one will take off and run with it. And I think Bitcoin already has that dominant position so unquestionably that, you know, the other ones are gambles, much more so than Bitcoin. Like, at this point, I think something really just has to kill Bitcoin for it not to become the standard.
And that's LaserDisc. All right.
HD DVD, ladies and gentlemen.
Guy, I can't thank you enough. You've been incredibly generous with your time. We're going to get you out of here. We just need to come back to our last segment, Three Answers, where we come back to get the answers to those three questions from the start of the show. And the first one was about what the first purchase was that was made with Bitcoin. Is that correct?
Yes.
And yeah. Jim, what did you say?
I said moon rocks, and Hari said socks.
What's hilarious is socks is actually close. one of the first stores, this is not the first purchase, but one of the first stores that was like, we accept Bitcoin, was actually a store that sold alpaca socks.
And, wow.
It was a huge meme in Bitcoin for a long time that people like, you can't buy anything with Bitcoin. It's like alpaca socks, like right here.
How do you like that, Jim?
But it was the moon rock department that actually made the first sale.
The very first thing purchased with Bitcoin was Laszlo Hynek traded 10,000 Bitcoin for 2 supreme pizzas.
Oh my God.
Somebody else ordered him pizza and he sent them 10,000 Bitcoin. Don't worry. He is totally fine. He is actually the guy who invented GPU mining. So he has more left over. In fact, they've interviewed him before and he's like, yeah, I'm actually really glad I have that spot in history. Totally fine.
I mean, it's really the only reason we all know the name Laszlo
Hynek. Yeah.
Hynek. Right. Sorry. I get my Laszlo's confused.
That's gotta be the happiest pizza delivery guy ever. Right.
Yeah, that's one thing is people don't talk about the guy who ordered the pizza for him and received the 10,000.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
All right. So question number 2 was more about why is government money bad money? I'll let you say it, guy.
That was 3.
I'm sorry. What was 2?
Gold. Why is it better than gold?
Thank you. Why is it better than gold? And I said because there's a finite amount. And then Hari told me that that's stupid. And there's a finite amount of gold as well. But Hari, you said it was because of gold falling out of favor and security. And then you went into something about believing in yourself.
Well,
all correct answers. I'm sorry. What we were really looking for was you can buy drugs. Actually, on the scarcity point is... gold is scarce, yes, but it is actually far less scarce than Bitcoin. Like, it's finite, but the inflation rate is like 1.8% a year. And if the price of gold goes up, it increases because they go find more of it. Like, you know, suddenly it's profitable to dig into a new mountain. And so now the inflation rate is 2% or something like that. But historically, it's a very reliably scarce commodity or metal. Therefore, in relation to everything else, it's been the best money. Bitcoin is the only thing that has ever existed that we can't make more of. There's just 21 million. End of story. So its inflation rate right now is actually equal to gold's. It's like 1.72% or something like that. And in 3 years, that will cut in half. And then in another 4 years after that, it will cut in half again. And it will cut in half again. In very short order, within the next year or two, it will be the scarcest monetary asset on the planet. And then that will be cut in half very shortly after that. And there will be no going back. It will be the scarcest thing that the most secure thing from a unit perspective that we have to use as money.
All right. So I'll take that point. And then question number three. Question number three was about, well, Guy, why don't you tell us what question number three was, please?
Okay, why is fiat money bad? Why is government money bad?
So Hari said it was because of the influence of government, and then I said it was because the Democrats stole the election.
Yeah. Also, both correct answers.
Okay, good. Okay, good.
Actually, the government influence is pretty much it, is because somebody has a master key. It's provably unfair money. While Bitcoin is provably fair, fiat is provably, you know, the reason money doesn't grow on trees. You know, you heard that phrase all the time. Mm-hmm. Money doesn't grow on trees because if it grew on trees, we would just call them leaves. Like they would fall to the ground. We'd rake them up and we'd set them on fire. You know, like they would be worthless because they are not scarce. Fiat money is as if these three or four special people have money that grows on trees, and it's illegal for everyone else to sell the seeds or to plant their own tree, and their house gets confiscated if they plant a tree, and those people get to pull the leaves off of their trees and buy up all of our stuff. That is literally the system we have right now, is that one, literally a handful of institutions can get loans at prices that don't actually exist in the market because it's newly issued money. And there are institutions that say, it's really important for the economy right now that we have $6 trillion to divvy up against among our subsidy friends and our corporate friends and our political friends and all this stuff. And it's really great for the economy because it's going to produce a whole lot of jobs for people who are then going to buy your stuff that you work really, really hard for, and they get essentially for free. So yeah, that's why fiat money is bad. It's because somebody can counterfeit it, and there are people who can counterfeit it at no expense. Whereas if you counterfeit it, you go to jail.
That makes a ton of sense. We can't thank you enough. I mean, this has been awesome. I know you can talk on the subject all day, and we've certainly taken a lot of your time.
I'm jumping right on an episode. I'm awesome. About to do a recording.
So. I love it. Good. What? So Bitcoin Audible, Shitcoin Insider. Those are the two podcasts. Where yep. else? If people want to reach out to you, social. What else would you like to share with us today?
So I'm Guy Swan on Twitter. Like that's just my main account. Is the handle is actually The Cryptoconomy, even though crypto is kind of a scammy-ish word now. I took that name way before crypto was actually a thing. So I didn't know that was going to happen.
Okay.
But I still like the name. So I'm keeping it. It's like the network or whatever that I'm building around. But that's my handle, is The Cryptoconomy, but you can just search Guy Swan. You'll see my little cartoon picture. And Shitcoin Insider is a new podcast, but I'm really excited about it. And people have seemed to really enjoy it recently, but you can get to all of that at Guy Swan, and that's SWANN.com. I kind of link to like my most recent things, my YouTube channel, most recent podcast episodes and that sort of stuff. So that's probably a good place to just like, if you want to get to all the stuff, the Twitter, Instagram, and the podcasts.
All kinds of great information on there as well. Hey, we can't thank you enough for taking the time. I'm definitely Absolutely. Looking to keep learning more. This was incredibly informative today, and helped me make sense of a lot. And I hope it did the same for our listeners. So, again, Guy, thanks for joining us. Check him out, and we'll be right back.
Thank you, Guy.
Oh man, that was Guy Swan, who made so much sense of Bitcoin to me. I mean, I felt like I wanted to take this more general crypto, some of the differences, but he quickly clarified that Bitcoin's the major player. That's everything else is kind of wrapped around it, and it really helped dig into kind of what makes it so unique and different. James, I know you've been on this kick for a little while already. Hari, what did you think? Where did this change things for you?
It really changed my perspective of the value of it. Like, because I'm one of those people that I just see, read in the news, one Bitcoin is now $20,000. And when you look at it that way, it's like, oh, this thing's just going to explode. What justifies that kind of valuation? When you look at the bigger picture, like Guy was explaining, that this is just, it's not, if you don't look at it like you're speculating or trying to, you know, make a quick extra dollar out of it, but you're actually just buying into a better system of currency, changes your whole way you look at it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's fascinating. I understand some things so much better, but then there are other roads we went down that it's like, ah, shit, now I got to understand the different types of wallets that are out there.
And yeah. Yeah.
I got to understand mining better and things like that. So, but it's, it certainly gave me the structure I need to learn more and understand more about why, you know, that when Bitcoin goes up, that doesn't mean that Ethereum, you know, or these other cryptos are going to go up also. They are separate entities.
They're shitcoins.
They're shitcoins. Absolutely. I want to check out that podcast too. The Shitcoin Insider. That's, I like that stuff. That sounds fun.
And I think it's important to emphasize again that you don't, I mean, just because you read that, you know, one Bitcoin is $19,000 or $20,000, you don't need that in order to get involved. You buy fractional pieces, just like you would a dime, a nickel.
That's honestly what I thought at first. A lot of people that I talk to, because you know, you guys know I've been posting about it nonstop. And like,
what?
The number one question I always get is like, I don't have you have $19,000. No, I do not have $19,000. But and you don't need it. You can buy like, you know, a sat is like one fraction of a penny. So just start stacking sats as slowly as you can, or as fast as you can. You know, whatever's comfortable for you. But you don't have to be rich to get into this.
James, where do you buy? I'm just curious.
So I do, you know, I started at Coinbase. Coinbase is super easy to use. It's very user-friendly. They offer incentives. It's actually really good. I would recommend starting there for everybody because they have these little, like, quizzes that you can take for free crypto. And honestly, what I did, I took all the quizzes, and then I just converted all that crypto into Bitcoin.
There you go.
So, like, but I think you can get about $100 U.S. dollars worth of free crypto if you use Coinbase. And then I store my Bitcoin on a wallet outside of Coinbase, and the wallet I use is Mycelium.
James, did you learn anything new? I'm curious.
Oh, yeah.
You knew a lot of this, but...
I definitely learned that I'm probably not going to invest in any shitcoin anytime soon.
Seems like a negative.
It's too, you know, for me, and everyone has their own tastes, I don't want to be a day trader. I want to invest in something. And if you want to day trade, I mean, I'm on Coinbase all the time, just looking at all the, you know, all the shitcoin, altcoin, whatever you want to call them, going up and down. And it is a roller coaster, and most of them do kind of follow Bitcoin pretty closely, but you're just speculating on the technology that runs Bitcoin. So if you want to get in, why wouldn't you just buy the gold, buy Bitcoin?
That's it. Right. That's it. Buy the gold versus the speculation of the mining equipment.
Yeah.
I liked your analogy, buy the gold and stop tinkering with the mining equipment.
Right.
But I would say that if you want to tinker with the mining equipment, adultplayground.com.
This is
going to be wide open.
Come on. This is unreal, Hari. I can't believe you just did that to me and the people. Unbelievable.
Have I told you guys about frisbeedogs.com yet?
What? Wait a minute. Frisbeedogs.com?
We're going to save that. Yeah, we'll save that for next episode.
Is this another business idea?
It is an excellent business idea.
I would not assume that.
Really is the appropriate word.
All right. So will you tell us about it next episode?
I will.
Awesome. All right. Then let's get out of here. As always, James, thank you for all your hard work. Hari, wonderful to hear your voice.
All
of us here. Rate, review, subscribe. Thanks for listening. I'm sure we picked up a few new listeners today. Feel free to go back and check out
share
the podcast.
Check out some of the.
What'd you say?
Maybe lost a couple along the way.
Maybe probably lost a few along the way as well. Very fair. If you're still here, check it out. Check out some of our other episodes. Let us know how you feel. For Hari and James, I'm Jim Flanagan. This is What Do We Know.
That will do it for today. I really, really love this interview. So don't forget to check out those guys. If you want more of the What Do We Know podcast at guyswan.com/WDWK. And then also I've got Giacomo's excellent piece on the HOPF cycle and applying it to Bitcoin coming, and another great one on the way titled Wittgenstein's Money. You are not going to want to miss these, and they are coming later this week. So don't forget to subscribe to Bitcoin Audible and follow at Bitcoin Audible on Twitter. And until then, everybody, take it easy, guys.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.